Welcome to the NutGallery.com podcast. This is Jason James, and this is a special podcast where Shooter and I interviewed Donald Lawrence Flaherty, who created a fan film for Batman called Death of Batman. Hope you enjoy. Well, we're interviewing Donald Lawrence Flaherty, if I got that correct.
Yep.
And you created a fan film called Death of Batman?
Yep.
What can you tell us about it?
I mean, to make the question a little bit less broad, why did you make the film? And not maybe you can go more general on that too. Why did you make a fan film, or what made you make a fan film, even if we're not talking about this particular one?
Well, really how this sort of started is I have a couple of friends that are writers, and we do kind of give each other writing exercises. You know, here's the box that you can play in, so to speak. Basically they said, I wrote this thing, you know, and I mean, if you watch the film, basically it's Batman and one other character in a room for 90% of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the sandbox that I just started with. And out of that, I wrote it and I gave it to my friends, and they really dug it. And then they passed it on to a couple of other friends who thought the concept was really cool. And before I knew it, we were sitting around thinking, you know what, we should shoot this. And so we, got some money together, you know, and we shot it. And we shot the whole thing basically in 3 days. And the budget was $5,000, which the majority of that money went to feed the crew and to buy the actual bat suit that Chris Stapleton wears in the movie. Actually, we had to kind of have two of them made, because there's the one at the beginning of the movie and there's one at the end where it's obviously he's been through weeks of torture. So we had to kind of have a messed up version of the same suit.
Oh, you actually didn't put him through weeks of torture?
No. About it, but we figure you know 2 months of torture would probably not be a good thing for the actor to go through. Yeah,
you'd have to find somebody really disliked for that role.
Yeah. There's method acting, and then there's method acting, and that was sort of how the thing evolved. I'm a big Batman fan, even though I've been accused not a fan, you know, by people that don't like the film because of the content of it. But it was really written as sort of a black and white series version of Batman, which is, I really dig those comic books. I don't know if you're familiar with the black and white series, but they tend to be what if stories in the, you know, sort of in the Batman universe.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them.
Yeah, so and I always like those because I like it when, you know, whatever, you know, you take a well-known character and they put that character in a different situation than you're normally used to seeing them. So that's kind of the basis of the film. It's definitely in the black and white series of comic books.
Did you do this seriously? I mean, just for fun, just for something that you wanted to do as an exercise, like you were talking about there, where they told you to, you know, here's your setting. You got to make a story based on this setting. It's two people in a room, and you grew it from there. I mean, or is there other reasons that you did it? I mean, I'm looking at the packaging right now of this of the DVD you sent us, and it's, I mean, it looks very professional. It looks
I'm a big believer. If I'm going to do something, I want to do it right, and I don't like to, for lack of a better term, do stuff half-assed. We pulled some favors, and we got, I did the artwork on we found this great little company out in North Carolina that, would make the DVDs. The DVDs actually grew out of the fact that, we got so many requests to see the film initially when it first came out, that it was a little overwhelming. And so we thought, you know, if we're going to do this, we might as well do it right. So we, you know, we had the packaging done and the DVDs created, and it was done at a very, we got a really great price through a friend who hooked us up. And, you know, it's also, you know, your name is attached to it. So I, you know, I don't want to represent myself as anything less than, you know, somebody that's very serious about their art.
Okay, that makes sense. And leading on to that same style of stuff, I don't have as much background. Maybe JJ has a little bit more here. But are you a film student? Are you working towards doing something in the film industry?
I'm a writer, and I just directed my first feature film, which is in post-production right now. And, you know, I live in Los Angeles, so and I've worked doing a lot of live shows over the years and different things like that. So, yeah, I definitely have friends in the industry, and we pulled a lot of favors to get this made for the budget. You know, $5,000 really is not a lot of money to do a film. And so, yeah, that's my goal. And again, it's, you know, the part of the packaging and the way it looks is, you know, people were in the industry have seen the movie, and I don't want them to see something that I'm creating, even at a micro budget to look like that it's not, you know, there's a professional level there that, you know, is way beyond the budget that you.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. And I commend you on how well that it does look. I mean, it looks like a very professional.
It was actually the first thing I thought when I pulled it out of the package was how nice it looked. So you guys did a good job with that.
Well, thank you very much.
What can you tell us about the casting process? Were they friends or?
Well, actually, I didn't know Chris Stapleton, who plays Batman, or Trip Hope, who plays his adversary, the thief, at all before the movie started. And the Batman role was actually really difficult to cast. We put an ad in one of the local trades, you know, and we had a lot of submissions of people. A lot of guys, you know, there were certain requirements. They had to be at least, you know, 5'10", 5'11", to, you know, 6'5". They had to, you know, be in good shape. They had, you know, we needed a leading man. You know, Batman's sort of the alpha male to the nth degree, you know. So we needed to find somebody that could fill the short, so to speak. And we saw a lot of really good-looking guys that were really bad actors. It was very, you know, and we were actually getting to the point where we were getting really desperate. We're like, oh, my God, we're never going to find anybody. And Chris walked in the room and literally he said one word, and I just knew. I was like, yep, he's our guy. And Chris is, you know, really threw himself into the role and, you know, did a fantastic job and was pretty fearless, you know, because, you know, it is an iconic character. It was a fan film. So, you know, obviously we're doing things at a very micro budget. He didn't care. He liked the concept of the film, and, you know, anything that I asked him to do, he was basically fearless. He just went for it. And, you know, I have, nothing but great things to say about Chris, and I just hoping that the rest of Hollywood someday figures it out, because I think he's a real talent. And then Trip, thief role was also difficult to cast, because that character has these huge monologues, and to find an actor with the chops to pull them off was really difficult. Also, we narrowed it down pretty quickly between and another actor who was also very, very good. Fortunately, when you're casting, sometimes it really comes down to how the players look next to each other, and Trip standing next to Chris just looked so out of he looked dominant. Trip's a terrific actor, but he's a small guy, so he wanted that difference in size, you know, that basically Batman is, you know, would beat the hell out of this guy any day of the week without even thinking about it. You know, that was sort of the physical dynamic we needed to find. And it was just by that one in a million shot that, you know, the thief character gets the upper hand. So we needed to have that the difference in physicality, you know, pretty clear. And Cisa, Trip is just a really, really good actor and another one of these guys that in Hollywood that's, you know, hopefully somebody else is going to figure it out soon.
I hope so too. You mentioned the $5,000 budget. How did the funding, or where did you get the funding?
Basically out of my own pocket.
Okay.
Some people take vacations, you know, to the Bahamas, then I make movies. So, you know, it's not a huge number. I mean, it's something that I could financially do, you know. You think about it, it's only $500 a month set aside for 10 months. It's, you know, it's really not that much money. So that's how we paid for it.
Can you tell us anything about the editing process then, once you got the film shot?
I actually, my really good friend Rick Lunn, who is a fantastic sound editor, he and I just basically locked ourselves in a cabin that he owns up out in Colorado for about 5 days, and we just cranked it out. We shot, you know, we edited everything on Final Cut Pro, you know, and did some stuff in After Effects, and then he created the sound design, and then I had another friend who's a professional musician out of Vegas who created the soundtrack, Joe Malone. And he did it all in, you know, on computer. So, you know, it was, again, it was sort of a labor of love. Everybody kind of liked the concept of the film, and, you know, everybody was like, yeah, let's do this. So, you know, it was just, and it was a lot of fun. You know, we drank a lot of beer and, and had a lot of fun while we were doing it. So, you know.
Beer makes everything better.
Beer does.
We need a fan film attributed to beer.
When in doubt, drink a beer, you know? It was just a lot of fun, you know, to hang out with, you know, my buddies and make this movie, and then also, you know, create a friendship with Chris Stapleton and Trip Hope, the actors, you know, was really, really made the whole process worthwhile.
We were kind of looking at the, and obviously there wasn't a whole heck of a lot of costume design to do so much with Trip, but with Batman, how did you go about designing that costume or having it designed to?
Well, what's amazing to me is, and I was kind of naive about the whole, you know, there's this whole world of people out there that are into creating costumes, you know, either Batman or Spider-Man or Superman, and you know, and there's a whole network of guys and girls that are trading information on how to, you know, how to make the chest plate and how to do all these different things. And I found this guy out of Mississippi, of all places. We chatted online. I sent him, told him sort of what we were doing, and said, said, I need two Batman costumes. And he said, well, this is what the materials are going to cost. And he created the suit for us. He did just a phenomenal job of knocking it out for us. And, you know, and it was kind of scary because the suit was literally arriving a couple of days before we were starting to shoot. And we weren't even sure if it was going to fit Chris correctly, and I never actually met this person in face to face. It was all done either via internet or over the phone, and you know, he delivered it right on time, and we made some adjustments to the suit, because a lot of, like, the Michael Keaton costume, you know, is completely body armor over everything. We added, actually, I wanted it to be a little bit more like the comic book, where Batman wears sort of a speed at his waist instead of just having the armor in that area. So, and that was done for two reasons: to make it look a little bit more like the comic book, with having the Speedo there, and also a lot of people have said, "Oh, he's wearing a rubber suit," but in practicality, you know, the Speedo represents sort of a vulnerable spot on the suit.
I'd say.
Yeah. You know, and we've had people can say, you know, Batman would be wearing a codpiece and, you know, protecting the family jewels. But, I actually did a lot of research and talked to some people that deal with body armor, and they actually all came back to me because we were trying to figure out a way to bring Batman down. And the groin region is actually the most vulnerable part of the male anatomy, obviously. And, you know, if you've ever played football or any sports where you have to wear a cup, sometimes the cup moves and, you know, your left testicle slips out. You know? That's just the reality of, you know, of human anatomy. And so, again, it's all this play on the idea that it's the one in a million shot. You know, and look, Thief just gets lucky. He goes for it, and you know, and we wanted to play it like he's as surprised by what's happening as Batman is. You know, Batman stands there at first, and you know, is like, you know, wait a second, this is not supposed to happen. You know, and you know, people say, oh, he's trained himself to deal with any kind of pain, blah 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 blah. And I'm sorry, I don't care how badass you are. You get zapped in the balls with a taser gun, you're going down. I mean, there's no way around it. You know, I've talked to guys that are involved, guys that police officers have dealt with guys with who are on PCP, and you know, and they say, if you taser a guy in the balls, they're going down. There's no training in the world that's going to protect somebody from that. So, you know, and it's not like he goes down easily. You know, he's still standing there while he's getting zapped. You know, it's not like he just crumbled to his knees and gave up. You know, the way we shot it, we did show that Batman is the badass, but you're going down. Sorry, buddy. and also it's one of the taser also represents, a taser is basically considered a woman's weapon. You know, a gun like a Magnum is a man's gun. It's a man's weapon. A taser is a woman's weapon. Even the build of it, you know, it's more feminine. So to have sort of Batman, the ultimate male, taken down is part of the psychology of the piece. I mean, you know, and that's the stuff I know. The audience doesn't necessarily need to know that, but it's here you're taking the alpha male and you're bringing him down in this one in a million shot, and he's being brought down by a woman's weapon. So, is this too crazy heady for you? But
no, it's fine.
There's thought behind kind of everything that went into the movie. The fact that Batman is injected with heroin again. A female superhero, the heroine, and the drug heroine. But we also, I talked to some doctors, and they said the reason that heroin is so insidious as a drug is that your body chemically changes once you get addicted to it, and then your body and it needs the drug. That's why when they try to get people off of heroin, they have to give them methadone, which is just a substitute. Because the body has chemically changed, and it basically needs that drug to keep functioning. So that was, you know, and I talked to, you know, a couple of doctors that if you've injected somebody with heroin, you know, pretty much for 30 or 40 days in a row, they're going to be hooked. There's just no way they would ever be able to beat that. The body has chemically changed, and they are going to be addicted to that drug. And probably addicted to it for the rest of their lives. That's why they would have to go onto methadone. If I don't know if you know anybody who's ever been addicted to heroin, but that's what they basically are. They're sentenced to a life of being either on heroin or methadone for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, we're kind of out in the boonies in the Midwest here, so we don't get a lot of that.
they're addicted. Well, there's a lot of people addicted to other drugs, but not heroin.
Well, you know, I was writing this piece with an iconic character. So, you know, I didn't none of the choices were made lightly. You know, it was like, this has to be well thought out, and I know we're going to get a really negative reaction from some people, and we anticipated that. So whenever people have made leveled charges at us, like, well, you know, this character would be able to defeat this, it's like, well, you know, we're trying to create something that was very factual. What if Batman actually existed in the real world, you know? So we tried to be as thorough in our research to make sure that it was all plausible. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be people out there that are that are going to, you know, that's their favorite. You're attacking their favorite hero or something like that, and they don't want to see that. But you know, in all reality, just like you're saying, there is very many plausible ways that one could off a superhero, especially someone like Batman, who is more known for his smarts. And doesn't really have any technical superpowers, you know. So I would actually thought that he would have been off by a rifle quite a long time ago.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there's even a couple of the black and white series where there's one in particular where this like teenage kid has a daydream and he ends up killing Batman with a rifle, you know, from a rooftop far away. You know,
if you could see him.
Yeah, you know, he is Batman.
So did Christopher have any issues with being tied up for lengths of time?
There was actually we shot pretty efficiently, but there was one moment for so long that like his arms were just starting to freak out. And the suit is just, you know, it looks cool on screen, but the reality of the bat suit is that it's really uncomfortable, and he probably lost 10 pounds of water weight just sweating in the darn thing. But yeah, he was a real trooper. He just sucked it up and, he dealt with it. So yeah, he was pretty much a superhero the whole time we were shooting.
Cool.
And I think it also he used it for his performance. I think the discomfort of the situation he used it for his performance. So
yeah, we were sitting around thinking while we were watching the movie. So where is he going to the bathroom? I mean, that would be very uncomfortable as well.
Yeah, there's different theories on that with Batman, and you know, I didn't really want to go into, even for me. I didn't think we needed to show that. But again, even if he couldn't go to the bathroom, like, you know, there are things where people actually control their bowel movements for you know, weeks on end. You know, if you want to believe that Batman is capable of doing that, it will poison your body, and it does, you know, you're literally poisoning yourself when you don't go to the restroom. So again, that would be another piece of the puzzle of bringing Batman mentally and physically down to such a low level that he couldn't resist toward the end.
Yep. Everybody's got their breaking point, even Batman, right?
Yeah. The psychology of the character. I mean, you know, not exactly the sanest human being ever to walk the planet. You know, he dresses up in a suit and as a bat and goes out and boots ass. So it's not like he's, you know, the poster child for mental stability. So, and I love the character. I think that's the fascination with Batman is that we all have our inner demons that we're fighting with. And here is somebody who's using their inner demons to, you know, try to make a positive difference in the world, you know? And that's what I think is one of the big appeals of Batman. But he's also a very messed up guy, you know, in a lot of ways. And that's also, you know, if one of the biggest superheroes out there can be messed up, then maybe it's okay for me to be sort of messed up in my own life, too. Is that, you know, I think that's why people like the character.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the biggest draw of certain superheroes is, if they weren't believable as a person as well as a superhero, no one could relate to them. So when you got somebody that's, you know, has a messed up life, you know, whether it's I can think of some examples at the moment, but I mean, for instance, Batman or whatever, he's, like you said, he's got some inner demons he's working with, and everybody has those. And if you had a superhero that had a perfect life all the time, you'd think, why the heck do they have a reason to be a superhero? And, you know, you just can't relate to him. And I agree.
Yeah. There's no fun in that, you know. I mean, you know, Batman's really cool because he's got all the money he could ever really want. He's got all the hot chicks after him. He drives a really cool car. You know, he's built like, you know, a brick shit house. He's probably, you know, got a 30-inch long dick on top of everything else. You know, and yet even with everything going for him, he's still got this inner crisis that he's fighting.
You know, on that note, you know, you see that he's always with a different woman all the time. So maybe it's actually very, very small, and that is one of his main problems. Maybe all his inner demons are based on that. A little bit of penis envy.
You never know. You never know.
Well, someone can explore that in another fan film. Moving on.
That's a different fan film, not to be made by me. it's a great character, you know, because he kind of, it represents all the things that every guy sort of wishes they possessed, you know, and he's still messed up. And so that makes me feel okay too, because if, you know, the guy who has everything is messed up, then, you know, because my life's not, you know, I don't have the perfect life and I'm messed up. It's okay. You know, that's, you know, it's a great character. It's just a great character, and I love the fact that he's such a pliable character. You have the Adam West, the Batman animated series. You have the, you know, the Batman Begins version. You have the Michael Keaton version. You know, they're all a little bit different, but it's still the same character. You know, and they can play to such different audiences. You know, it's for kids. It's for older people. It's a great character. So
now, in some of the early scenes of the movie, you have some backdrops. Were those painted or digitally made, or?
That was shot. Those are just photos from LA that we photoshopped and kind of gave a comic book look. It was actually fairly simple to do, but we wanted to kind of create a very comic booky look to the film, you know, on a very small budget.
You didn't have a whole lot of sets, but where and what was the process of building the one main set?
We found a little soundstage out in the San Fernando Valley where they actually shoot a lot of the home and garden shows that you see on, you know, on TV. They already had the flats already pre-built, so we just put them together, and I had a friend who had been wanting to get into some set design for films. He'd done some theater stuff, and I gave him like $1.50 and said, okay, knock yourself out. And he put a pretty good set together for us for really no money at all. You know, most of this stuff was just a labor of love. You know, people just liked the script and they liked the idea, and and they came down and, you know, they worked their butts off for me for 3 or 4 days. And at the end of it, we had a little Batman film. But the last count, I think over 2 million people have seen the film. So it's pretty amazing that for $5,000, 2 million people have seen the film. Either loved it or loathed it, you know, whatever. They still saw it. So
that's quite an audience.
Yes. You mentioned you did some writing before, and you are a writer. Along those lines, what's your movie making background? I mean, did you have other films that before this that you had written for? Did you do other films? Is there some other
stuff? I had done, you know, lots of little, you know, things all through high school, college. You know, this was actually the first thing that kind of blew up. You know, we really didn't have any idea for fan films, and we were one of the very first fan films. I think our film and Batman Dead End basically came out at the same time. They actually both came out at the Comic Con, and before our films, there had been lots of Star Wars fan films.
Oh yes.
George Lucas does a great job of encouraging fans to make films, and there had been a few Star Trek films. fan films, but I really hadn't seen any Batman fan films. And one of the things that was, that has been the really coolest thing of our doing our film was I've had so many people email me saying we're making a fan film and, you know, how did you go about doing it? And do you have any advice? And now there's a whole bunch of them out there and it's just, it's a lot of fun to see it happen, you know? And, you know, there's Aaron, Schoenig who does, has done some really good Batman films also. He had done a Batman, Beyond, fan film and then he's done a couple of other Batman fan films and, he's a super talented kid and, you know, so now there's this little, community of Batman fan filmmakers that are all moving up the ladder and doing bigger and better projects. So it's been very cool to see the whole thing develop, you know, and played at least a small little part in that process of, you know, people, you know, expressing themselves, you know, with this character, you know.
What kind of camera and other equipment did you use?
We shot on Beta SP, and then we took everything over to Mini DV to edit. And the Beta SP camera is kind of the stuff that they use. They're fading them out pretty quickly because the technology changes so quickly. But it's the stuff that like Home and Garden shows with, you know. And John Meyer is my DP. He did an amazing job with literally no lights and he just made the film have a look that was way, way beyond, the amount of, money he was given and the equipment that he was given to work with. You know, that's actually one of the things I'm most proud of the film that, you know, whatever people want to say about it, I look at a lot of the other fan films out there and the lighting is not great or, you know, you can see a lot of flaws. And I think John just did a phenomenal job, with no money and making the film look, you know, really good, especially with the limited equipment he had to work with. John Myers is just an amazing DP. He's worked on a lot of different things and I can see him in 10 years, you know, being up at that podium at the Oscars. You know, he's just, that's where he's headed. And on top of everything else, he's a really good guy. So,
with those cameras you used, did you happen to film any funny outtakes during the filming process?
You know what? Not really, just because we were on such a tight schedule, you know. We had so many pages to get through. The fight sequence, you know, which is just a very small part of the film, you know, that was literally a full day. I have so much respect for these guys that do these fight sequences now, especially with the cape was a nightmare. You know, it sounds good on paper, but when you're cutting from one angle to the next angle, and just the cape is a nightmare, you know, a continuity nightmare. So we spent we lost the whole day basically just doing the fight sequence. So everything else that you see in the movie, except for the outside of the exteriors, all the other scenes were basically shot in a day. So we were cranking to get everything in the can, you know, because we basically had the soundstage for a weekend. We just didn't have a moment to spare.
Do you have any advice for filmmakers trying to get a project like this off the ground? Just
probably
general?
Two things. I would say the biggest thing is rehearse your actors long, long before you go anywhere near a camera or a set. You know, I've worked on a lot of films out here, you know, just helping out with, it's amazing to me the number of films where you're just sitting on the set waiting while the directors or the actors are learning their lines and, you know, rehearsing and, you know, figuring out their marks and all that stuff. And you have a whole crew sitting around, you know, and when you've got, you know, $200 million to do that, great. But if you're on a low budget, film and you're not paying people, make sure your actors are know their stuff. It will make your life a lot easier. And the other thing is, you know, set a goal and just go for it, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise, because everybody will tell you, "Oh, you can't do that," or "Who do you think you are?" Or they will come up with a million reasons to try to talk you out of doing, you know, your film. And if you really want to do it, then you need to be like a laser beam and just, this is going to happen. On any film project, I know lots of friends who have started films that have never seen the light of day, just because it's really hard. It's really hard to finish a film. And I take any criticisms that people have toward any of my work, you know, I listen to it and try to, you know, appreciate the criticism. But at the same time, people really have no clue what it's like to finish a film unless they've done it. And then the criticism that I always take are from the people that have made movies, have seen it always, and then I really listen to what they have to say. Anybody that has not made a movie, I'm respectful of their opinion, but, you know, I don't give it the same weight as a person who's made a movie, because, you know, you just don't know when you're watching a movie what was happening with that actor on that day that you know, you didn't think the actor was very good. Well, you know, you never know. The actor's mother may have died that morning. You know, there's so many things that can, you know, get in the way of finishing a movie, you know, so.
Well, essentially, you need to be the one that's happy with your end product anyways, and
yeah,
anyone else that likes it's a bonus.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally it.
Separate the criticism from the constructive criticism, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any other projects in the works right now?
Well, I just wrote and directed my first feature, and we're in post on it, and we're hoping to finish it before October if the stars align and everybody plays nice. It's called The Steam Room, and it's a buddy film. It's about four friends that meet after work every day and just at this crappy old gym, and you know, and they talk shit, they drink. I'm really proud of it. You know, I think the actors that are in it are going to be big stars. And it's very exciting, to see that. One of the actors is Colin Fallon-Wider. He's actually Spider-Man in Spider-Man 3. He's the guy in the suit. And then one of the other actors, this guy Brian Collins, who was in Pirates 3, and he's just a super, super talented guy. And then Big Dave Mady, who was actually Toxie in one of the Toxic Adventure movies. He's in it, and he's just the most talented person I've ever met, and he's 6'10".
Whoa.
Yeah, he's a big boy. So, you know, he put on, he had to play this fat, overweight character, and he put on 65 pounds. Yeah, just got a great little cast of, and Morgan Fairchild is in it, and Muse Watson. So I'm just really excited to actually get to direct and write and direct my first feature film, you know, which is my baby. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, cool. I think we're done with the normal line of questioning. If you're ready to go, we'll do the rapid fire right away.
Okay, great.
I'll just ask you a question. You just give me your short answer, I guess. The first question is, anything you are currently reading or listening to?
Los Angeles Times every day. The Superman soundtrack.
Describe yourself in three words.
Loyal. My that's tough. Loyal and hardworking. That's kind of cheating this forward.
Yeah. Perfect for a job interview, though.
In your opinion, who has done the best Batman so far?
I like parts of every Batman movie. I really liked certain parts of the Michael Keaton version. I liked the first part of the Val Kilmer movie. I thought it was really cool until Robin showed up. I wasn't a huge fan of that part. I liked certain parts of Batman Begins. I actually know Christian from where, and so it's obviously it's they're very exciting to see somebody that you know become Batman, and and I thought he did a great job, and so they're all fun to me. We don't really talk about Batman and Robin, but that movie never actually happened in my mind. There's parts of all of them that I like. So it's really hard for me to say which one I think is the best. That was a cop out answer, wasn't it?
Yeah, we'll let it fly.
Okay.
Is there one person that would make a perfect Batman?
You know what I would love to see? I would love to see an unknown. I would like to see somebody a la Christopher Reeve. When I was a kid and I saw Christopher Reeve as Superman, he was Superman. I didn't know, we didn't know anything about it, anything really before that. I wish they would cast somebody just completely unknown, scour the world, find Batman, find a guy, who could fill the shorts,
Just don't outsource that to India like everything else seems to be going there.
Is there one person you'd like to meet?
Bill Clinton seems like he'd be cool. Whatever as far as politics or whatever, I just think he seems like he's so intelligent, and I'd like to have a beer with Bill. I think that would be kind of fun.
And
Steven Spielberg, I'd like to basically hang out at his house for a few weeks. That'd be cool.
There you go.
Would the perfect evening with Bill Clinton involve his wife as well, or would you rather just hang out with Bill?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, would the perfect evening with Bill Clinton involve his wife as well, or would you rather hang out with Bill instead by himself?
I'd hang out with Hillary. I'd have a beer with Hillary. She's no dummy, I think I'm always fast. I like to hang out with people like that I think are smarter than me, and I think both of them are pretty smart people, you don't have to agree with everything that they believe or they represent, but, you got to respect the fact that they're not dummies. So yeah, I'd hang out with Hillary, but I think Bill would be funner to drink a beer with though. But you never know. Right. Hillary could be a wild woman, when his cameras are turned off.
All right. So beer and cigars with Bill. All right.
Yeah, there you go.
The final one, if you had unlimited power to change one thing in the world, what would it be?
I wish we would just stop acting as humans. So we've just been acting like such assholes for so long, as far as the planet is concerned, blowing each other up and, fucking up the environment, and just like, would just stop and go, hey, this is dumb. Let's be smarter. I just feel like, we need to like stop and take a step back and get our priorities straight, and just get along, Leave each other alone and get along. So if I could lay that law down, no, you can't hate that person because they're different from you. I think that would be my one wish.
I think anybody would be very hard pressed to disagree with that.
Well, that ends rapid fire. And actually at this point we open the floor up and anything you want to talk about, it's open mic.
I really appreciate you guys looking me up and, doing this for you, and hope I didn't ramble on too much. It's been cool. And I love the fact that, the internet has created all these opportunities for, people like myself and like you to sort of follow their bliss and create their own programming and their own movies and, and we're not at the mercy of, big radio or the movie studios. If somebody wants to make a movie now, they can. And, and if you want to have your own radio show, you can. That's, I think it's awesome.
Well, you know, if Elton John had his way, he wouldn't allow that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard about the recent news. Jay here had a rant about that the other day about how Elton said that the internet was ruining it for true artists.
Well, that's one guy's opinion who's got a lot invested in keeping the status quo, I guess. You know, with any new technology, there's going to be a downside to it. You know, the upside of it is it's giving a voice to people that wouldn't have necessarily a voice under the old regime, you know? I think as long as the big record companies or movie companies are putting out a good product, people will come. And if they put out a crummy product, people won't come. So, you know, it really comes down, you know, they can complain about people stealing records off the internet, and file sharing and all that, but it ultimately comes down to product. So, yeah.
We definitely agree with that. You make it worth buying and people will buy it.
Yeah, you know. I mean, there's still, you know, the classics, you know, classic records and all that stuff are still selling, you know, because it's good quality, you know.
Yep, and I believe actually wasn't his complaint it wasn't necessarily people downloading the music for free. It was the fact that people could make their own music and distribute it and pretend to be artists, I think was his.
Yeah, that was kind of his complaint, was that any person could hook up sound stuff to a computer and make music, and they didn't have to be true artists to create it. And
yeah. So we were very, very adamant in disagreeing with him on that.
Yeah. I didn't hear his exact quote, so. You know, but I've heard similar things, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. That's my only answer to that. You know,
yeah.
And who decides who's an artist? I think the word artist gets thrown around very haphazardly. I think, you know, we all strive to be artists, but very, 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 very few people achieve it, and it really is something that you achieve once you're dead, you know. We'll see.
Alrighty.
Great. Well, it was a real pleasure. I look forward to hearing more about your guys' stuff in the future, and I hope we stay in contact. And, you know, anytime you're out in California, you want to grab a beer, you know.
That could happen. I'm making some friends out there now. So.
Excellent. Yep. Excellent.
And yeah, thanks a lot for joining us. And it was a pleasure also to interview you, and had a lot of interesting things to say, and we really enjoyed your film. So.
Thank you. Well, you guys have a good one. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks.